From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, ever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, my camera fiddling with right before I give his introduction, making sure that we're recording right now.
We are recording.
Producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
We are recording, Bob. But you know what? Silly me. I forgot to turn my camera on, but here I am. So we're good to go. Yes. Glad to be here, Bob. As always, another episode of Bob After Dark. You know, they turn the cameras off from time to time, and I'm not used to them doing that. And when it happens, it takes me by surprise because they're always on. So we had the sound quality just right, but we snuck in there with the video quality as well. But Bob, great to be here.
All right, Colin, it's good to be here.
It's good to be anywhere, Bob.
It's good to be anywhere. You know, it's the year 2021. Yeah, it's sure. Like, man, what do you, you know, the world of the COVID is still beating around us, and yeah. You know, it really messed up plans for a lot of folk.
It messed up plans for everybody, I think, Bob. But there was one person out there whose plans haven't been affected by all this. But as we soldier on here, we know one thing's for sure. Bob After Dark continues on.
Absolutely.
My little sentimental message right there, Bob.
You know, Count, I need the weekend update.
The weekend update, yes, Bob. As always, a fascinating weekend in my life. Lots of fun things going down. You know, I walked around a little bit, so that was fun. What else did I do? I flew around a little bit when I got bored of walking. But other than that, events, festivities, still not happening this past weekend. Still basically just wandering the earth looking for something to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I had an interesting weekend.
What happened to you, Bob?
Day job stuff. And okay. Working on podcast stuff. That's because nice. It's, you know, you're working... You work two jobs when you're doing something like this, and it's my life, and I appreciate what I have. And I got really, you know, I had a good moment this weekend. I was looking at our statistics for the show, because we switched to Podcastos. We're now with the good people at Castos, the Memoriam Development that powers the podcast side of things. And it's interesting, because now that we have the Castos account, I'm able to look at our demographics and our statistics more reliable on podcasts.
Demographics.
Life. Our demographics. Fun fact, our Sonic.exe episode, which came out about a month ago, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, time just morphs into one long clock these days with the show, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at the Sonic.exe episode, and my jaw dropped. Out of the Bob After Dark world of podcasting, which has been around for about a year, when we were doing the radio show for about a year and a half before, and it was just radio, but now we're reaching newer audiences, I've never seen a show get the numbers that episode came across.
What is that about?
I don't know. It's whatever about that particular episode really drew people to it, and I appreciate all the folks that have stuck around after the Sonic.exe episode. So, you know, the folks that are listening to the show thinking we're going to be talking about video games, you got the wrong show. Bob After Gaming is tomorrow night. But it's really cool. And I also have to give a shout out to, fun fact, where our biggest listeners of our podcast are at.
Where are they at?
Virginia and New Jersey.
So I thought we were big in Wisconsin. Now Virginia.
Listen, I was not expecting to sit down, you know, Pat from Ghostly Podcast is walking me through our new service to help figure out, you know, I'm looking at my own stats now and looking at where the demographic is. And I was impressed. Not West Virginia, where the Mothman is at, which is where I would assume, you know, people would be.
Of course.
But no, it's the legitimate, like, normal
Virginia.
Virginia. So what's up, Virginia? Thank you for tuning in to Bob After Dark.
Is there something about Virginia, Bob, I wonder, that makes them so attracted to the paranormal? What do you think
I don't know. And as far as the New Jersey thing, because we didn't do like a Virginia-specific episode. We've never done one. West Virginia would be the closest to that with the Mothman stuff, but I don't know anything about Virginia specific. New Jersey made sense because we did the Clinton Road episode about a month back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying to figure that part out myself because people still stuck around from New Jersey and Virginia. So guys that are listening in podcast land from New Jersey and from Virginia, I just wanted to say, oh, hey there, specific for me.
All right. Well,
do we have a caller already?
We do. Right out of the gate, we have John here.
John, it is way too early. I haven't even gotten through introductions yet. What could possibly be on your mind?
This is what's on my mind, Bob. I don't want to wait till midnight like Jack.
I appreciate it, John.
I had to call early today because when you asked the count for his updates, he forgot one important thing that he
did. Oh, yes, I forgot.
What's the one important?
You know what? I'm just going to leave it at that, and I'm going to hang up and listen. You
well, wait.
Now, John, stick around because I finally watched that documentary you suggested about the Cecil Hotel.
Oh, yeah. What did you think of it?
I'm going to share that here in a moment.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know what? Like I said, I had to call early before the count flew away over there.
There you go.
One of his weekend update festivities that he didn't mention. I'll let him bring that up, and you know what, hey,
I really
got a good show ahead, and I'm gonna continue listening, so you have a good show.
Thanks, John, appreciate you.
I forgot to mention here, now you when you asked me for weekend festivities,
yeah,
when does the weekend start for you?
Saturday. So with the day job, sometimes my weekend is literally Sunday and that's it.
All right, well, I guess this could blend in with the weekend. Last Friday was John's birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday, John. You so should have said something.
Well, I said something in the afternoon on Friday, but like, I never said it.
Not on Bob After Dark.
Not
John's
on Bob
like,
After Dark.
Listen, if there is, John's like the unofficial, like, third co-host to the show.
Calls him.
Anthony's busy these days, and when we can get him around, we will again. Steve's really busy these days and with the wrestling. John's kind of like my unofficial co-host.
Because well,
he
birthday.
Calls every week. It's his birthday. So happy belated birthday, John. And I'm a little disgruntled that that you didn't tell me.
Well, sometimes, you know, when I think of the weekends, I think starting Saturday and that Sunday, I forget about Friday evening. But yes, it was his birthday. So happy birthday once again.
Happy birthday, John. Jeez, panic, you're terrible.
Got to take him to Big Frank's sausage dinner.
We will. We're going to go have his Zweig at the Big Frank's.
And also, before I forget something else here, Bob.
Uh-huh.
Before we go forward with the show, and I know you got to talk about you watching that.
Yeah, because it's important to see the whole thing.
I got to, last week we had some great guests from the Challenger Learning Center.
Yes,
Laura Bates,
Emma Louise.
They're, of course, talking about all things supernatural and space. Laura stopped by today, and I'm going to turn my mic off. I'm going to walk in there and give you a couple items right here. So let me put.
All right. Count's about to bring me something, and I'm a little afraid of what this is because Count never crosses into my threshold. This Count has his own wall and his own glass, and I don't get his presence. But check this out. Look at that. We got a 2021 Explore Human Space calendar from the Challenger Learning Center, courtesy of NASA. This will be a big help to me. And a poster. And I could tell right away by the poster, I could see Mothman's eyes glowing red.
Oh, wow.
What is this? Oh, there's two posters in here. Oh, my God. It's a... Laura, thank you. It's a I Want to Believe Mothman poster.
Look at that.
Look at that! It's the Mothman over the bridge. I said last week I wanted my own I Want to Believe poster.
That's pretty cool.
And now I have my own for the... Now I have my own specific for the Mothman. And I had the other thing that fell was just a spacer. Laura, thank you so much for... The nice gift, that's getting framed and hung up directly in the studio office, my office. So thank you so much, Laura. That's very sweet of you. I've never, in my time, I search a lot for merchandising. And I've never seen this bit of Mothman merch. It's impressive.
They know what the Bob likes. They know what likes.
Laura, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. That's very sweet of you.
And also, we got somebody else on the phone here. The callers keep on coming here.
I haven't even had a chance to say what I thought about the Cecil Hotel doc.
I think this is somebody close to you here, Bob.
Who is on the phone?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, hello.
Is this the original creator of Bob After Dark?
Yeah, I had something to do with it.
What's up, Bob Senior?
Hey, I just want to wish you a happy birthday, Ashek, and many more.
Well, how about that?
Bob After Dark is now the happy birthday line for John.
Old gang members getting together.
The Kishka gang getting
wrong
back together.
What's that, huh?
Anything else on your mind tonight, Dad, or you just wanted to call and say hi to John and wish him a happy birthday?
You got Marie packing up here about the Kishka gang.
Any ghost sightings around the house lately, Dad? Uncle Lenny come and say hi to you?
We haven't seen a physical ghost, but my brother, Uncle Lenny.
Yeah, Uncle Lenny.
Oh, yeah. He when he gets mad, he throws things off of the counters and everything like that. But, yeah, at least we know he's around.
Yeah, definitely. We miss you, Uncle Lenny. Thanks for calling in, Dad.
There you go. Okay, you guys be good.
Have a good one.
That was nice of your
that
dad.
That was nice of Dad. How about that? Now can we get to the documentary?
You watched the documentary.
Yeah, have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Okay, so to our paranormal fans out there, no, it is not a paranormal documentary. They touch on it, but it's definitely a true crime show tenfold. It's true crime podcast 1,000%. It's a true crime documentary, I'm sorry. True crime documentary from beginning to end. And I'm not typically into the true crime stuff, Forensic Files, etc. I'd get through it with Unsolved Mysteries when they'd have it on there when you have to get to the paranormal stuff. But the world sucks enough, and I don't need to be told how much it more sucks by true crime. That's my belief. And in the world of paranormal and in the world of true crime, we hang out. We do. We hang out in the same bowling league. We bowl for separate teams. You know, there's the true crime people, there's the paranormal people, the conspiracy theorists, and I guess like the Doomsday Prepper podcasts. Like we all hang out in the same like bowling league, but we're not on the same team, if that makes sense. So the true crimes, we cross paths on the occasion, but it's never like a specific, like definitive, straightforward thing. And I caught myself watching the first episode and I was like, okay, so there's nothing paranormal about this. I'm going to lose interest really fast. And it wasn't just John. I had other members of the Children of the Night community saying, have you watched the Cecil Hotel documentary? No, I haven't. So I finally gave myself a chance, and I watched the four episodes of the Cecil Hotel. And from a paranormal aspect, that place is probably a hot spot for everything, and I'd probably argue that there's probably some sort of portal there. And after Phalor Month, our first episode back from Phalor Month is going to be an expose on the paranormal happenings at the Cecil Hotel. But the Cecil Hotel, the true crime documentary that's on Netflix that I urge all of you to watch, it's fantastic, is centered around this young lady by the name of Lisa Lamb. And Lisa Lamb, this is a very brief, very, very brief. The whole story is the mysterious death of her, where she was this, you know, traveling university student from Canada who went to Los Angeles and unfortunately met her demise in some really mysterious ways, ended up in a water tank of all things, like a building.
I heard that story.
Yeah. And there's actually the premise behind the elevator game is actually based on the last seen footage of Lisa Lamb. Mm-hmm. I don't get connected very easily to people I don't know. I mean, there's times when I get like a little emotional if somebody in the celebrity world dies, like when Lorraine Warren died, I felt that, you know, and there's things like that. But I've never met Lisa Lamb in my life. At the time of her passing, she was 21. She was born a year after me, and I never met her. And I, to be honest with you, previous to this documentary, I never knew anything about her other than that girl in the elevator video. But throughout the documentary series, I kind of became friends with this girl through reading, seeing what they were putting up on when she had her blog up on Tumblr, talking about her mental illness. We're big advocates here on Bob After Dark for the mental illness world. And, you know, I actually, when I got done with the series last night, because I did a marathon in two nights, it was like six episodes, I think, I got through it, and I legitimately, I think, shed a tear for this girl I never met before. And I can honestly say, like, that whole documentary really sheds a light on mental illness. It sheds a light on how the crime world works, and it's brilliant. And I don't give my praise to things on the show very often that's not paranormal, because it doesn't fall in the suit with what we talk about often. There are paranormal aspects to the story, and we'll get to that at another time. But as far as everything's concerned, and it's been many years since her passing, 7 years, in fact. She passed away, which they found her body February 19th, 2013. And from the bottom of my heart, man, to reaching out to the universe and the afterlife, Lisa Lamb, you left this world way too soon. And your story has inspired me, and your typings and your writings and everything, that's just, it's all encompassing, just something. And that really hit home for me. And I can't stress this enough. I recommend you guys watch it. It's a really good documentary. And we'll cover the paranormal aspects of the Cecil Hotel after March, but we'll move on with the show now. But either way, the Lisa Lamb, wherever the next part of this is, this after journey, I hope you found yourselves, and I hope you found everything, because, man, that's just, it's more than a murder story. It's more than an accidental death story. At the end of the day, that's tragic, and that's the human struggle right there. And I'm getting a little choked up here on the show, but either way, that's my recommendation, folks. Get a moment, you get your downtime on a Sunday, pop that sucker in, watch it, and just be ready, because it's a roller coaster. So that's my quick review of the Cecil Hotel. 5 boom shakalakas out of 5.
Is that how you review things?
That's how I review things. That's cool. That's the new review scale. All right. For Bob After Dark is the boom shakalakas.
I like that. One thing before you move on here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mothman, somebody wants to chime in. Mothman, Sauk Village, Illinois. Any sightings there? People claim to see Mothman and Sauk Village.
All over Chicagoland. There is. The Google Maps has a thing where you can go and filter on all the Mothman sightings in the greater Chicagoland area.
All right. Well, there you have it.
I'm seeing a lot of people chime in the chat I haven't seen in a very long time. Doug Meyer, friend from Minnesota. Dr. Ben Vanerson from Des Plaines. We have Mick from Australia. Hey, guys, it's really great to see all of you all together.
They want to hear about Sonic, I think.
We're good. We did that one once. Right. And you know what? If we have to do a follow-up episode to Sonic.exe just for the sheer popularity of the episode, I guess that's what we got to do.
Sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
All right, moving on. Bob After Dark, if this is your first time ever watching us live or listening to us in podcast land, we are the show about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, cryptid sightings, and various other bits of nonsense that you might get yelled and might get called crazy for. But on this show, nobody's crazy. We hear your opinion, and we share these stories of the things unknown. So let's get spooky. Show's divided up into two parts. We talk about the weird spooky news of the week. This is where you, the fans, submit these news articles to us to talk about live on the show. These news articles can range anywhere from the paranormal world rising up into the mainstream media status. It could be anything from the occult or anything like that. Ghost sightings, cryptid sightings. It could also be weird advances in science fiction or science that borderline on science fiction. And it could also relate back to the world of nature being more discovered and these odds and ends things. Speaking of the world of nature, let's kick off our first story. Actually comes to us from one of our fans who probably has the record. Her and James go back and forth, I think, with the most articles submitted to us, is from the University of Cambridge. And that is a functioning mechanical gear seen in nature for the first time. Previously believed to be only man-made, a natural example of a functioning gear mechanism has been discovered in a common insect, showing that evolution developed interlocking cogs long before we did. The juvenile Issus, a plant-hopping insect found in gardens across Europe, has hind leg joints with a curved cog-like stripes of opposing teeth that intermesh, rotating like mechanical gears to synchronize the animal's legs when it launches into a jump. The finding demonstrates the gear mechanisms previously thought to be solely man-made of an evolutionary precedent. Scientists say this is the first observation of mechanical gearing in a biological structure. Through a combination of anatomical analysis with a high-speed video captures the normal isos movements, scientists from the University of Cambridge have been able to reveal just these functioning natural gears for the first time. And they published this in the Journal of Science, which is, that's like, in the world of science, if you get published in that journal, that's a pretty big deal. Long story short, the legs move within 30 microseconds of each other, with 1 microsecond equal to a millionth of a second. And this thing pretty much is crucial for the way that this fly has adapted itself to be able to jump from plant to plant. Hmm. And the fact that this gear mechanism is just at the beginning stages of evolution where we found it, they're saying it's at the early stages. So this thing can evolve more and more. And the fact that this thing isn't relying on joints or muscle movement, but a physical muscling cog to move the limbs of the fly is just fascinating. And it just goes to show, like, what creation can do in the, you know, line of evolution. Hashtag panics take. And thank you, Whitney, for sharing that story with us.
All right, so let me get this straight. So this is kind of mixing the two together, natural wildlife and mechanics.
Yes.
If I'm following this correctly.
Yes.
So this is just on a fly for right now.
It's a fly. They found this in a fly. It's legitimately cog-moving muscles to make this thing, like, move.
But they don't know exactly how.
Evolution. Science.
So you're saying,
hold on, and I get
on.
To do this. I only get to do this once in a great while on the show. I get to take my glasses off if you're watching at home, or if you could just pretend my soothing voice here is doing this directly to you. But I'm pointing my glasses at the camera and I say, life finds a way.
There you have it. Well, we'll just end the show right there.
Do you get the reference?
I get it. Jurassic Park. Jeff Goldblum.
You yeah. thought about that for a second.
Well, the fly too. He was also the fly. So I thought.
I don't think he didn't make that line, which
no.
is one of my favorite lines in film history, and it makes perfect sense for what we talk about on the show. Life finds a way.
So do you think this is going to be a thing that is going to be more common, maybe with larger animals?
I am not a biologist.
That's true. But
I play one on TV.
If you had a hunch,
I would say, and I hope somebody in the chat's a little bit more knowledgeable than me, or somebody that's listening to this in podcast land can email us, bobafterdarkshow@gmail.com. Send us over an email and let me know if I'm wrong. And I probably am. And hopefully somebody can shed some light on this. But I'm assuming that if this fly was able to evolve to creating these cogs, movement now, and it take however many centuries of this fly being around to get it, I'm assuming that it's probably not something we're going to evolve to have at some point,
yeah.
at least not naturally. Now, whether or not, you know, scientists are able to create these, like, artificial limbs with cogs, maybe, you know, something like that.
No, for sure. Well, I'm just wondering, a fly, of course, a fly is so small.
Yeah.
What's the chances of a larger animal getting stuff like
this? I don't
know.
If somebody knows this answer better than I do, please tell me, because I talk about ghosts.
And what's the next step here? Laser beams, Bob?
Wings.
Wings.
I'd be all about having wings.
Yeah,
I mean,
I guess so.
According to some of my fans in the world of the Children of the Night, you know, some people believe I am the Mothman. I'm not the Mothman.
No. But you never seen the Mothman and Bob at the
We have.
Oh.
There was a Mothman sighting at a convention I was at while I was inside giving a panel.
You're right. Okay. But, yeah, but you could work around that somehow. You could have dipped out warp speed time or something like that. But
yeah, sure.
That's interesting stuff. So mechanics and wildlife coming together as one here.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right. Let's thank you, Whitney. And this one's actually from Whitney Ronan as well. I'm going to sneeze, Count. Can you?
Oh, okay. There we go.
Sorry, guys. I'm going to try to edit that out.
The mics are over there, so I have to spin my cart.
I was going to try to catch it, and I'm like, oh, geez.
Next time, just give me a 10-second warning.
Yeah, let me think ahead of myself. I've never sneezed in the history of the show. First time.
All right,
moving on. Scientists clone the first U.S. endangered species. This comes to us from NBC News. A black-footed ferret was duplicated duplicated from the genes of an animal that died more than 30 years ago. It came to us from the Associated Press. Scientists have cloned the first U.S. endangered species, a black-footed ferret, duplicated the gene from an animal that died over 30 years ago. The Sinkley predator named Elizabeth Ann, born December 10th and announced Thursday, is cute as a button, but watch out. Unlike the domestic ferret foster mom who carried her into the world, she's wild at heart. You might have been handling a black-footed ferret kitten and then trying to find it, trying to take your finger off the next day. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service black-footed ferret recovery coordinator Pete Goober said Thursday. She's holding her own. That was a long sentence. Elizabeth Ann was born and being raised at the Fish and Wildlife Service black-footed breeding facility in Fort Collins, Colorado. She is a genetic copy of a ferret named Wilma who died in 1988 and remains were frozen in the early days of DNA technology. Cloning eventually could bring back extinct species such as the passenger pigeon. But for now, the technique holds a promise for helping endangered species, including the Mongolian wild horse that was cloned and last summer and born at a Texas facility. Biotechnology and genomic data can really make a difference on the ground with these conservation efforts, says Ben Novak, the lead scientist with Revere and Restore, a biotechnology-focused conservation nonprofit that coordinated the ferret and horse cloning. The black-footed ferrets are a weasel easily recognized by dark eye markings resembling a robber's mask. Charismatic and nocturnal, they feed exclusively on prairie dogs while living in the midst of the rodents' sometimes vast burrow of colonies. From there, they're just talking a little bit more about statistics, so we'll move ahead there. But count! We have now successfully cloned something that's pretty much endangered and extinct.
Well, okay.
Two times. Now, I didn't hear the story about the Mongolian horse, but now we got this ferret.
No, because I know the first most famous case is the sheep. Or yes. Was goat or Dolly, the sheep.
The sheep.
And that was a long time ago, and I haven't heard much about cloning since then. But as well, things are cloned, too. You know, their animals are starting to get cloned now. When do you think people are going to start getting cloned? How many people out there? I mean, a Bob clone or a Tony, a panic clone.
I know several people that would scream if there was a Bob clone. Probably not screaming in joy either. I've cracked that joke with the Queen of the Night several times, what she thinks about the
Evil Bob.
Clone me. Evil Bob would be some sort of like cell phone salesman at a mall, like on a mall kiosk.
Would our clones have the same personality as us?
Now you're getting
into a
sociological like debate here.
Okay, so what was this animal? What was it, a ferret?
It's a ferret. It's a black-footed ferret.
Well, this ferret had the same personality as the ferret they cloned. I mean, what goes on there?
Probably not. Yeah. I mean, you got to think. Now you're diving into a pretty hardcore thing here, which borderlines on things even like Blade Runner. Do things like replicants and clones have personalities and identities of their own?
Yeah. And will ferrets, the ferret that is cloned, will it know it's a clone? Or will it think it's just a regular ferret?
Now you're talking crazy.
I have so many questions, Bob. Let's get some of those scientists on the phone, shall we?
Do you have one?
I don't know.
I thought you were saying somebody was calling in. Scientist.
Do you know any scientists? No. Yeah, that's the problem. We need to find some scientists out there.
I guess. Scientist fans that are listening, they tuned off a long time ago, a real scientist.
Well, again, we talked about the first story you had, robotic limbs mixing with natural wildlife. Now you have cloning with these animals. These animals got a lot to look forward to, it seems like, here.
Yeah.
But people, maybe that's the future, too.
Very much so.
Would you volunteer to be the first clone?
No.
No. You let it,
because again, I'd be thinking there'd be like a Blade Runner situation, yeah. Then I'm gonna have to go hunt down my replicant. And it's
always
just
happens.
Gonna be a whole
you
thing.
Hate when that happens.
Yeah, no, I don't know how I feel about that. Again, there's this level of like playing with the whole, you know, two sides of a coin and the whole nature thing, and there's a level of things that we should be looking at and a level of things that we probably shouldn't. And at that point, you know, you're arguing, if you're a believer in that sort of thing, that you're playing God, and I think that disrupts the natural balance of everything. Now, do I think there's some you know, merit in cloning endangered and extinct species? Sure, I guess. But, you know, I saw a little movie a long time ago. It starred this guy named Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum, and they went to an amusement park where they cloned dinosaurs.
Oh.
Maybe you've seen it. It's called Jurassic Park.
Wow, we're bringing that reference again here.
It's the second time I get to say that's a thing. You know, I get to mention Jurassic Park on the show, but you can see how well that worked out.
No, we don't want that happening too, but cloning dinosaurs, that could never happen, right? That's just a movie. That's fiction. Right?
We're cloning ferrets.
I guess time will tell.
Listen, if somebody does clone, even if it's just like a ferret park, you can invite me. I'll be at your opening.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah.
Yes. Me and Count will be driving a Jeep through like ferret infested amusement park.
We gotta get you a cane.
Sorry, that might be copyright stricken. How many seconds can I play before?
I think you're good. They're not gonna tag us for that one.
You might. They might.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. The future is The future is here. But here's the thing. If we do get that dinosaur clone, we could name our own dinosaur. So think about that. Although we got one now, so I guess we can't complain too much anymore.
No. Yeah. We're still waiting on that drink, though, like the actual official bar drink and sandwich.
We got to market the one that was made already and just sell it. To...
I don't think the Displains Ghostbusters remember how they made the
Bob.
That's
terrible. I know it
exploded. They said they worked on it for like 14 hours or some nonsense, drinking the entire time. But
it was
smoking Bob After Dark purple martini that actually tasted really good.
It explodes in your mouth.
It does. Let's move on to our last news story. This one comes to us from James from Peoria, and this is the Witch's Tree cast its spell over Louisville. The story comes to us from the Journal and Topics. I believe that's a servicing Chicago's Great Northwest suburbs. I don't know, but specifically written by Rich Warren. At the corner of 6th Street and Park Avenue in Louisville, Kentucky, stands a twisted, gnarled tree, its trunk covered with massive burls, its canopy of thin branches crazily extending every which way, making it look like the tree is caught in a perpetual whirlwind. Strewn on and around the tree are dozens of Mardi Gras beads, tarot cards, candles, and even liquor bottles, like offerings to some pagan idol. Behold, the Witch's Tree of Louisville is a long place of mystery and pilgrimage. Yes, those are in the picture. There's a picture of the tree on the website. And it's broomsticks are propped up against it. As the legend goes, a beautiful maple tree once graced a spot, which was a place of gathering of those involved in the dark arts, which is casting their spells and performing their rituals. In 1889, the city's fathers of Louisville proposed using the tree as a maypole in the city's May Day celebrations. I wonder if they knew what the maypole meant, moving on. Hmm. The witches objected, but the tree was chopped down anyway, sending the witches into a frenzy of cursing, telling Louisville to beware the 11th month. Exactly 11 months later, on March 27th, 1890, one of the most powerful tornadoes in Kentucky history struck Louisville, destroying hundreds of buildings and killing dozens of people. During the storm, according to folklore, a freak lightning bolt hit the spot where the maple tree had been chopped down. The disfigured and contorted tree is now standing at that location and sprouted to begin to grow. And we're getting up onto the anniversary of this tree. It's not much of a news article as it is like a piece of history, but it's still a great story. And it's not something I could just cover an entire episode of Bob After Dark on. So it's a good place to put it in either way into the news stories.
Well, the maypole, Bob, that used to be a thing on the playground, too.
Yeah, no.
No?
No. I mean, it is, but...
But there's...
The witchy origins of the maypole are very...
Yeah.
That's some stuff, man.
But I think when people think about maypoles, they think about happy thoughts, but it's not...
They're happy thoughts.
But it's
thoughts.
Not always...
Oh, no, they're happy.
The history, yeah, but they don't know the full history.
The history's got some happy thoughts if you know the history behind the maple. Yeah. You know,
People
love each other very much, and they get happy. Well, we're gonna keep it G-rated.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, we're a family.
Enough has been said
show.
About
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, but it's very interesting. And people say, like, during Halloween, trick or treaters like go and leave candy there by the truckload. And I've been to Louisville twice, or have driven through it several times, but I've only been in the city twice. But the next time I'm in Louisville, we're going to make a trip to the Witch's Tree.
All right.
It's pretty a fascinating spot. I'm impressed. So thanks, James, for sending that in.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Are you ready to move on to the next part of the show?
Right now?
Right now.
I am ready.
Do you have something to drink?
I do actually have a
tea. All right, folks, we got a review.
All right.
5-star review on the Apple Podcast. This is where Count Panic toasts you live on the show, and in podcast land, you get to hear it after the fact.
All right.
This is from a 5-star review written to us from the name Daily19. The title of the review is Creepy Yet Cool. If you enjoy stories of the paranormal, the cryptids, the unbelievable, you will enjoy Bob After Dark. Stories are discussed in a matter-of-fact way, so you can decide on your own take. Or you can just agree with Panic's take. I love the weird and unusual news stories as well. Glad to see them back in the world of podcast land on a regular basis. Daily 19! Thank you for that 5-star review. And Count Panic!
All right, Daily 19, here's to you and good health. And to you, Bob, as well.
Ah, to you too, Count Panic. Thank you. And thank you so much, Daily 19, for the 5-star review. Folks, remember, if you're listening to us again on Podcast Land, because remember, we did take a little bit of a hiatus from the podcast version of the show because podcast host migration, it was a whole nightmare. So, unfortunately, and I say this every week, and this is going to be me doing my Bernie Sanders, I'm once again coming to you and asking you for 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. We needed to rebuild those reviews. Over time, we had a strikingly great number of reviews, and then unfortunately, one day, it disappeared, and now we're rebuilding that up. So folks like Daily 19, who left us those 5-star reviews, folks, those are the numbers we need, because the more 5-star reviews we get, the more integration we get, and the more people notice us, and the more faster I get to moving on to doing this as my full-time job.
There you have it.
So thank you so much, Daily 19. Folks, if you want to get a toast live on the show and be the children of the night focused fan of the week, that name's a working title.
It's a working title.
It's a working title. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review, and leave your username so you can be read out loud. You can go under a fun little pen handle like Daily 19, or you can have an actual name and be happy to read that.
Maybe so Daily 19 is the actual name. Last name 19.
So thank you so much, Daily 19. We appreciate you.
We do.
Count Panic.
Yes.
I think it's time for us to take a quick break so I can blow my nose.
Okay, we could do that.
Because I sneezed and it's been a rough live radio, folks. It's tough.
Well, how about that? While you do that, I will turn down the microphone. So throw out the break, Bob.
Folks, we'll be right back to our podcast fans. Stick around because you're going to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. And to our live fans, hang out. I'll be right back in just 5 seconds.
Hey, true believers and new believers. This is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
And we're back. Yeah. Count Panic.
You know what, Bob? That was probably the longest break we ever got.
Listen, I had to do it. That's a first on the show.
That is. But, Bob, I could ask you what you did on your break, but you literally blew your nose.
I did. Yeah. And in the meantime, I decided to evolve and grow some gears in my legs.
That's nice. Well, that's funny because I kind of did something similar.
What did you do during break?
I cloned myself.
Did you? Where's your
Let's
clone?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Folks, this isn't a drill. Get your wooden stakes ready because Evil Count Panic is
Bob, I lost my clone.
Get the wooden stakes ready, folks. We're going on a hunt.
No. What happens if you lose your clone? What's the rule book on this? What happens?
I'm telling people to get the stakes ready. Get some garlic ready. We're going to go hunt Count Panic.
But that doesn't affect me if they take out my clone, right?
We need to differentiate which one's which. Are you the clone or are you the real Count Panic?
I guess we'll find out here soon.
Hello. You were the real Count Panic.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Do you like cheese curds?
I do.
Okay, so you're the real Count Panic.
Glad we got that out of the
what's
way.
What's that place we go to in Wisconsin right over the border?
The Mars Cheese Castle.
Ah, you are the real Count
Panic.
I am
the real Count Panic.
Okay, so be ready, folks. If you see Count Panic's clone.
Take him out.
Take him out.
He's swift.
Armed and dangerous.
He is.
Probably the most dangerous creature reeking around right now.
Yeah, I think he's got a Sharpie in his hand, so be careful.
Now, folks, real quick, before we move on to the lore of the week, our phone lines are open, 219-845.
Yeah, 845.
Is that our phone number?
219-845-1100.
Wow.
Did you forget the phone number, Bob?
I did. I thought it was 847.
Okay. No.
219-845-1100.
Do not call 847.
Don't call 847-1100. They might not be happy with you if you're calling at this time of night. If you're listening to us in podcast land and you have a question for the Bob After Dark crew and you want to ask live, you can call during the Tuesday night live hour that we do the show. So that's definitely a thing.
Yeah, Tuesdays normally sometimes bounced around for sports. Check your local listings. The best way to stay posted is to go check out the Bob After Dark page.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Pete just chimed in the chat and said, maybe he's not the real Bob. He forgot the number.
That you could be.
I am not. Listen.
You might have been cloned.
I was not cloned. No. If you guys see the clone of Bob After Dark, you shoot him.
The fact that, you know, Bob never goes out and blows his nose either. And
I might be a clone.
This might be. A lot of things are not adding up here.
So you guys can call in 219-845-1100. You can even do it during the live show. Call in, say hello, ask us a question, or if you just want to tell us about a ghost sighting, cryptid sighting, anything like that, feel free to call in and share. Mm-hmm. Now, Count Panic.
Yes.
It's March.
That is true.
And we have a tradition here on Bob After Dark.
Yes.
It's Faelor Month.
Faelor Month.
Faelor Month.
Now, for people at home that don't know what is Faelor?
Faelor is the traditional lore that is based in the Celtic areas.
Ah.
Things like the Wales, Ireland, Scotland.
Alabama
for a certain Faelor. And these creatures have their own sets of rules. They're like cryptids, so they're monster-esque. But they follow their own sets of rules, and they're typically a lot more terrifying than the American stories that we hear of, like, Bigfoot and the Dogman. Now, these things will kidnap your children, they'll eat your brains, they will, you know, it's not pretty. And we've covered several bits of them on the show over the years. But my absolute, every year I get really excited about March, but this year I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. You know, you cover so much of the Faelor stuff, and you start running and hitting walls.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, we're gonna talk about, you know, and there's gonna come a time where I'm gonna have to recycle stuff from the radio days,
of course,
to move into the podcast.
Sure.
But I'm good. I still have stuff.
There's a lot to cover.
Still a lot to cover. Yeah. Absolutely. But I'm very excited to talk about this. This week on Bob After Dark for the lore of the week. Ripped straight from the files of Dr. Ben Vanderson, is the story of the Kelpie.
The Kelpie?
The Kelpie.
Okay.
Do you know what a Kelpie is?
Yeah, the term sounds familiar. What is it?
Well, you see, Count Panic, while researching Faelor creatures this year, I feel as though I hit a snag. Over the past couple of years, Faelor Month is typically filled with creatures I already done. Leprechauns, banshees, the puka, and even the certain Mobile, Alabama leprechaun. Yeah. And this year, I'm digging deep to try to come up with content that is new and fresh for you, the children of the night. A lot of the stories I find are short. Not a lot of content to fill my normal time slot. As this month carries on, I'm going to do a montage or clip or list episode, but I can't do that every week. You would all get tired really fast if I just said, this week on Bob After Dark, 5 more Faelor creatures, 3 more Faelor creatures. That gets tiring. From even a writing, a script standpoint and researching, you find good stuff and, you know, it's great, but
yeah.
I can't do that every week. Mm-hmm. But luckily, I found a creature this week that will fill an entire episode. And, hey, Count Panic.
Yeah.
Have you ever swam before?
You know what? I'm not a strong swimmer, Bob. Not a strong swimmer at all. You?
I've been known to float a little bit.
Well, float is different than swimming, but I guess we got two definitions right
there. I've been known to get in the water. All right. Time.
Yeah. I just kind of stand there. I hope for the best.
You know, I could ruin that experience for you real quick. You ever wonder what life forms are in that body of water with you?
Well, are we talking about
anything?
Because in a pool, I feel like I'm pretty safe. But bacteria. Lake and ocean, I guess that could be kind of scary. Bathtub as well. I feel pretty safe in the bathtub, too.
Well, to some folks, this can actually spark fear within a person to the sheer thought of actually just standing in an open body of water, not knowing what's beneath you. This is a real phobia called thalassophobia. thalassophobia. And who could blame them? In the world of the paranormal, there are lots of things that lurk in the water that can be terrifying. Beings like mermaids, kappa, and, you know, even the kraken lurk under the waters beneath. Well, our Faelor creature this week can drive the fear right into someone as well. To kick off Faelor Month 2021, we are talking about the Kelpie. Before we begin, I just want to say thank you so much to Historic UK, The Origin of Fae, written by Ronel John Ferrarin, and The Dead Witch Amino. I had no idea what an amino was, but I learned what that was, luckily. The Kelpie is also known as the Water Horse Demon of Scotland.
Water Horse Demon of Scotland?
The Water Horse Demon of Scotland. A Kelpie is a shape-shifting aquatic spirit of Scottish descent. Its name may derive from the Scottish Gaelic words Kalipach or Corpach, meaning colt. They are extremely malevolent and have been known to take... extremely malevolent creature that's said to haunt rivers and streams. They can shapeshift and take any form, really, but have been known to take the shape of goats, deer, and even humans. But they prefer the shape of a horse. Why a horse, exactly? A horse is a horse, of course.
That's true. You're right.
The horse is a very luring creature, right? You see him kind of romanticized in, you know, pop culture all throughout the eras.
Everybody loves horses.
I like BoJack Horseman myself. It's
yeah.
A great show.
Yeah.
Moving on. The specifically, you get to think of, like, what would a horse track the most? You're driving on, you know, a car with kids, and they point out the horses on the farms along the expressway as you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
Really likes to... to lure people in that really like horses, specifically children. And other bystanders is looking like a tame pony, welcoming a nearby people to approach and pet the creatures. Once the person has the urge to mount the Kelpie will ride right into the water, and no matter how hard you try, you can't get off. The Kelpie will not allow you to dismount. And the farther and farther it rides off into the water, it'll end up drowning, or not drowning, but causing straight fear and hysteria to the rider, and giving the Kelpie a thrill to eat them. Kelpies are known to eat and combat with other fae creatures as well. They are an enemy pretty much to everyone. And much like our old pal, the Nukuleve, we covered back in Viewer's Choice Month, they have control of the water, causing floods and various other disasters, killing crops and various other things that can come with a lot of standing water. A Kelpie's taste in humans can vary based on the being itself. Taste, and when I say humans, I mean what they actually want to eat. Some say they are dragged down, and some entrails are left behind. Livers are the most commonly discarded organ from a Kelpie. Maybe they just don't like booze-soaked organs, or a human heart. A Kelpie, when shape-shifting, is said to be surrounded by mists, but typically always keep red eyes on all forms. They try to be as appealing as possible. Kelpies are also very dark when it comes to their sense of humor. Kelpies find it very humorous when someone drowns or falls or hangs out around a bog. They like to stalk these bogs, not to kill somebody, but just to see somebody die at their own hands and at their own clumsiness. When a Kelpie returns to the water, it is said that their tails hit the water with such force that it could sound like a thunderclap. If you hear this thunderclap, it is traveling near a body of water. It's supposedly told that you should probably run away really fast, because either this Kelpie is about to emerge and try to submerge you under, or it could also be a Kelpie warning other Kelpies that there is a storm approaching.
Multiple Kelpies.
Kelpies.
Oh, Kelpie.
Kelpie?
Maybe a lot like that, yeah.
When Kelpies take the form of human, they usually take the form of a nude woman, hoping to lure men in for a night swim of pleasure. And it, you know, and if the old saying goes, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Maybe you should avoid naked women by a body of water at night. A common tale that's mostly told around Kelpie lore is the story of the 10 children. The story begins with the Kelpie managing to lure 9 children on its back at once. The 10th child was very cautious of the horse that could also carry 9 children no problem. That's a pretty valid concern. When the 10th child finally appeared, appeared very cautiously. It says that the Kelpie itself was having, excuse me guys, when the 10th child approaches the Kelpie, it's said that it was very more cautious, and the Kelpie really tried to get the 10th child to get away with the other 9. It says that the 10th child ran far enough away from the water that the Kelpie gave up, and the child watched the 9 others get carried away only to be drowned and die. Alternative endings to the story say that the 10th child was caught by the hand and they severed off their own finger and got away. Mm. Now, every creature I talk about, I try to teach someone how to defend themselves against said creature. The first bit of knowledge I could drop on you is, well, that these things are tough to fight. They could turn into the water the second things are about to turn into a fight. They are immune to curses and warding spells. So you really have no shot of fighting these things.
No,
you have
it doesn't sound like it.
No, it'll disappear and liquefy in the water, no problem.
It seems like, though, the best way, just don't get on it, right? I mean, it's...
It's an alluring horse.
I know, but sometimes temptation is there, I know, Bob, but I feel like you'll be safe if you just don't ride this horse. Is that what I'm getting at here?
You just avoid the horse.
Avoid
the horse.
Although it's luring you in, you know? Yeah. Sounds horrible.
I do have a chance to give you some hope, though.
What's the hope?
The hope is that if you catch the Kelpie transforming into horse form, they will actually manifest with a brittle or bridle.
Really?
That's the little muzzle that goes around a horse's snout, and they're able to kind of control the horse that way. It manifests with one. So a person with very strong will that can overpower a Kelpie mentally can actually grab a hold of the brittle, causing the Kelpie to become obedient.
Yeah.
And if you can cause a Kelpie to be obedient, you can actually cause the thing to kind of become your own servant.
So you could train a Kelpie is what you're saying here. It's a trainable horse.
Yes. Oh. But you got to be able to catch it, and you have to have the strong will in order to grab a hold of the brittle.
Interesting.
Did you know that you could summon a Kelpie yourself?
Well, why would I want to do that, Bob, if it does all these bad things? How do I summon a Kelpie?
Well, it is said that if you know the right rhymes and if you're at the right body of water, you could summon one.
Really?
Yes, but you have to know the proper set of rhymes.
What? Okay. Do we have them here?
No.
Oh.
They didn't give you the... They don't give me the rhymes there to just sell, you know, to summon a Kelpie. The lore just says to say the rhymes.
Yeah, but you think it would help out to actually know the rhymes. That way, in case we want to summon one, we would know them. But can I go anywhere for these rhymes? Where do I find these rhymes?
I guess you just have to start digging into ancient Celtic lore to try to find out what the Kelpie summoning ritual is.
I can't just Google it. I feel like this could be something I could find on Google.
There is another way.
Oh.
It is said that you can offer some of your blood,
really?
Drop it into the body of water, and will a Kelpie to come back, come towards you. The problem with that is once the Kelpie gets a taste of your blood, they want more and more and more.
That doesn't sound good.
No. So
avoid that one.
Avoid that.
Yeah, the rhyming
because the Kelpie will keep coming back for more and more of your blood.
So the rhyming is safe. You get a Kelpie, and then if you could train the Kelpie, you're good. But the blood thing, that's not good. That's not going to end well for you.
No.
No. Okay. Well, I'll try the rhymes. If I can learn the rhymes, I'm good to go. Is there a third way?
No.
Oh. That doesn't leave me with too many options there, Bob.
No.
All right.
Well, the Kelpie is a fae creature originating in Scotland. Most major bodies of water in Scotland have their own Kelpie stories. And since there's so many different bodies of water in Scotland and so many different stories, there's obviously going to be some variations to the story. One of the more interesting ones I found was that of a Kelpie with a mane made of serpents.
So well, that's terrifying. The serpents. Now, are the serpents friendly at least?
I just saw an image of somebody, they told stories, like they painted based on stories of this Kelpie that rose from the water, and it had serpents for a mane.
Serpents are usually not friendly beings, though, creatures.
No.
No. No. Right. So you're riding on this horse, and the mane is trying to attack you, because the mane
is made of snakes.
Snakes on a mane.
Doo-doo-tsh.
Yeah, feel free to take that.
I certainly will.
Crowd's going wild back here.
Now, not all stories of Kelpies are bad. Yes, I can understand that you're looking at this story and you're listening to me talk about it, and you're like, wow, these things are really horrifying. And yes, they definitely are absolutely horrifying creatures. But not all the stories are bad. There are stories of Kelpie turning into human form and falling in love with another, you know, an actual human and deciding to stay in that form.
Really?
Yes, and there's also tales that the Kelpie is actually the guardian to the afterlife. In ancient Scotland lore, they believed that the water was a pathway or a portal to the afterlife. Once you reached that portal, you would meet a Kelpie. If you meet the Kelpie in your life, and you would ride the Kelpie. This is the one time it's okay to ride one. It is said that if you ride the Kelpie and you lived a positive and good life, your ride will be very smooth to the afterlife. It'll be, a briskful way. You'll see your memories floating away on the water, and you'll be carried on
Sounds
to what's
nice.
Next. However, if you are a bad person or lived a bad life, a sinner, if you will, you would approach and ride the Kelpie, and you're going to have a pretty bumpy ride.
Well, that for sure sounds like it. Now, once I get on the Kelpie, he says there's no way of getting off the Kelpie.
No.
Okay, so I'm stuck on the Kelpie. Even if I tame the Kelpie, I can't get off the Kelpie anytime I want?
No.
Okay.
Well, if you can tame the Kelpie, like let's say you get a hold of the Kelpie bridle, right?
Yeah.
And you're pulling the horse around by its snout, and you can actually tame it to be your own because you're basically making it, you tamed it.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So you get off the Kelpie with need be.
Yes, and there are stories of farmers who are actually strong enough willed to combat the Kelpie and make it work on its farm, on the farmer's farm. And it says that the Kelpie actually has the strength of 20 horses and can get a job, day's work of worth done 20 times faster than a crew of horses.
That's a lot of horsepower right there.
Yeah. Man, you're just full of them tonight, aren't you?
I've got to get a 2 for 2.
You know, I the stories of these horse creatures are always fascinating to me, because these stories from the Celtic area and these fae always a lot of times take the form of a horse. And you know, in the case of the Nuckleave, that's more of like the Celtic centaur, but both of them have very similar properties. And it's a very frightening thing to me, just thinking that you're going to be in the water, and then the next thing you know, you're being attacked by some sort of water horse demon.
Well, it's interesting, because people, when they go into the ocean, generally sharks, they worry about sharks, or jellyfish, or some things that could harm them. We have to worry about kelpies now, it sounds like.
You know, I just ruin everything for you, don't I?
We can't have fun in the water.
No, you can't have fun in the water.
This is why I don't go like going to the beach, because stuff like this might happen. Now, kelpie be in any body of water, lake, pond?
They prefer ponds, lakes, and bogs.
Okay.
But I wouldn't, you know, it doesn't go without saying that it's potential that they could be somewhere else, you know. Maybe in your swimming pool.
That's what I'm saying. Jacuzzi.
But the thing is, they travel within the water spiritually, so I don't, you know, unless they're hanging out in sewer systems and coming out and attacking you, a kelpie is not just going to magically appear by your bathtub. It has to be a running piece of, you know, running water or some sort of body of water. And in the world of energy, what we talk about in the paranormal stuff, it makes sense, because water has a very big conductive property in the world of, you know, the unexplained. A lot of weird things happen around bodies of water. That's why whenever I do an investigation, you always want to check what is around in that sort of case. So it doesn't surprise me that these things hang out in water, and it doesn't surprise me that the stories tell us that these things are extremely dangerous. From a straight, you know, from a lesson learned world, from a fable world, a tall tale, people might tell these stories to kids to help them avoid either A, coming across wild horses and trying to pet them, because apparently wild horses are extremely dangerous, or trying to approach running water by themselves. So if you don't want to look at it from a paranormal sense, and you're trying to figure out where these tales came from and this lore came from, that's part of where they potentially started from, is the idea that these things hang out in water and avoid the horses, avoid the water.
Now, you mentioned kelpie. Kelpie comes from Scottish lore?
Yes, it's from the waters of Scotland.
Now, you know who else is from the waters of Scotland?
I hope you tell me.
Nessie.
Oh, is that so?
Nessie is also from the waters of Scotland. Now, does Nessie ever, is there any stories out there of Nessie colliding with kelpie?
No, but some say that Nessie is a kelpie.
Nessie herself.
Nessie herself is a kelpie. Wow. Yeah. Some say that it could be the last kelpie, and that's why it just makes itself known once in a while. There are stories that say that that might be an actual kelpie, and it might be the last one here.
Can you imagine if you could tell people that you rode Nessie?
Well, I'll tell you what. If you go before me, which I hope you don't, but if you go before me, and you have to ride the kelpie to figure out which way you're going, I hope your kelpie is in the form of Nessie.
Oh, but that'd be something. Like, and if you live to tell about it, hey, nobody would ever believe you. That's like if you got in a fight with Bigfoot. Hey, I rode Nessie. I rode a kelpie. Nobody would ever believe you.
No, and you know, the fascinating thing is about these shape shifting creatures is what they like to transform themselves into. The kelpie, when they're not talking about when they're not transforming into the world of horses, they're also going as goats. And they're also turning into people.
Oh, wow, that's terrifying.
Well, I was saying before, you know, if it's too good to be true, you see it's 2021, you could be attracted to whomever or whatever.
But the kelpie is leading you in that way.
Exactly. So, you know, if you're being attracted by whatever you're attracted to or whomever you're
might
attracted
be a kelpie.
To, it might be a kelpie. Hmm. So you should probably avoid the skinny dipper. I could say skinny dipper and still be.
You could say skinny dipper,
okay,
Bob.
That's fine. I just want to make sure we're still family friendly.
Well, here we are.
Okay. If you see a lonely skinny dipper saying, "Hey, you want to come for a swim," and they're very alluring to you, probably should avoid it.
Now,
probably a kelpie.
If I ask them if they're a kelpie or not, do they have to tell me yes or no? Can they lie to me?
Yes.
Oh. Well, it's like a cop.
How panic.
Hey, are you a cop?
If there's, you know, three rules to the fae is, one, you don't trust them.
Uh-huh.
They lie a lot.
That's
like rule number one. Tricksters. Of dealing with fae. Yeah.
All right. Well, I thought maybe they would have to be honest with me, and but obviously not. You bring up a good point there, Bob.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're saying just avoid it altogether. Don't get in any pools with skinny dippers. Don't get any horses that with serpents.
I said before, I don't think a Kelpie is going to be haunting your pools.
No. They are tricksters.
They are tricksters.
Yes.
They could be in anything. I saw Pete chime in about the Little Calumet or the Des Plaines River are like the two big ones from the area.
Yeah. Funny enough, I was there earlier today.
Did you see a Kelpie?
I didn't see no Kelpie, no, Bob. I'll keep my eye out, though.
Are you sure?
There was that one skinny dipper now I'm thinking about.
Were they trying to get you to go under the water?
To come to think about it, yeah, that was going on today. Maybe it was a Kelpie, Bob.
I think that calls for an investigation.
We'll have to investigate.
Count, you got any closing words for us tonight?
Closing words, Bob.
As we end our first week into Faelore Month?
Well, you know, Bob, you know, horses is generally beloved by all. Kelpie, though, doesn't sound like one that's all too, what should I say, friendly, kind of cunning and a little evil there. So I don't know if this is a horse I might just stick to, you know, the nicer horses like Mr. Ed and Seabiscuit.
Seabiscuit?
Maybe the Kelpie is not my speed. A little too fast, a little too powerful, a little too evil for me.
Good to know.
That's just my closing argument, Bob.
Folks, thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. We're excited to be here in Faelore Month. Excuse me during the pauses throughout this episode and me needing to sneeze. We had a couple random guests in the studio that threw me off.
We got a cowboy. Looks
I
like
had to
longer.
Blow my nose mid-show. This was a... But you know what? It's real. And that's the beautiful thing about the live shows is we have the real experience.
I think he came in on a Kelpie, I think.
If you came in on a Kelpie, we're going to have to deal with that real quick.
But yes, Faelore Month in full swing, Bob.
In full swing. So next week we'll be talking about another Faelore creature.
All right. No hints?
No.
Okay.
No hints.
All right.
You just get to pay attention.
I'll pay attention. Social media.
I just want to wish to my mom and dad good night, sweet dreams, and to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.